that's right. Good afternoon, everybody. Hey, I'm Ann Eller over here at Sharp Facets Gallery. I should take a picture of Gracie and just put the caption, "Let sleeping dogs lie." Because she's sleeping right now, and that's a good thing. Today, my very special guest is George McKinney. He, of course, is with Emergency Services, and he's been working. He's had a hard year this year. Starting last year in October, things were pretty dicey, weren't they, George?
It was an interesting 12 months so far.
That's right. And, of course, we're coming up on, really, the anniversary of that 1,000-year flood that they said isn't going to happen again. But then I have heard we could be in for some bad rains this fall.
Well, we could. It depends on how the weather system's set up. And if we do, in a way, it would help us out a little bit now. We're in a drought situation, especially on the western side. And
it's hard to believe, isn't it, that we could be in a drought.
You know, if you don't like the weather, just wait. It'll change.
Yeah, exactly. But just to kind of review, where are we at as far as all the things, the dams, the homes, the damage, this type of thing? Where are we at now?
We're still working. The biggest area that we're working on right now is the individual assistance that we're still working on. We have hearts and hands, and I'm going to be putting out later tonight to all of the individuals that were impacted by it. They will have an open house for those individuals to come in and apply for assistance. We're working with our Lakeland's Recovery Task Force, Long-Term Recovery Task Force, and going through the process of working with them to get them back to as normal as possible,
right,
if we can. And so that's still a long process. I still think we'll be working on it for another 6 months or so by the time to get all of them back up and going, because it's getting the resources in here to do it is also some of the challenges that were there, and also resources to pay for that. That is some of the challenges, and we've got some things coming out here in the near future that we're going to be able to hopefully help us out with that.
So. Now, how about the apartments that were so badly hurt over here? Fox Hollow?
Correct, yes,
right.
Fox
Hollow. How are they doing?
They're doing well. We've not had any real issues. In fact, tonight after this, I'm meeting with them kind of to talk and see where we're at with them, and also to gather some more information from a historical standpoint so that we can capture that and make sure as we go forward we keep that in our on our minds on what we're doing, so we don't lose sight of it if we have another 1,000-year rain in say 10 years or so.
Well, they've done a lot of work on the backside over here, Sample Road and coming through. They've pretty much closed off that whole stream river that was running through there.
Well, what they've done really is just put piping in over there, and that's part of the process that they've been doing for redoing the sewage lines through that area. And so part of that is they put in piping for the water to go through instead of just running free like that.
Yeah.
Over that.
But it's a pretty big change when you drive through there. I mean, we used to be at Burton Plaza years and years and years ago, and to see how that's changed is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got a lot of good things to talk about here today. We've got mosquitoes. That's a big issue. And, of course, we're going to be talking about how to handle that, what the county is going to be doing. So, George, first off, do we have the possibility of having Zika mosquitoes, the Zika virus in this area?
We do from one real reason, and that's more from travel locations. There's been 48 cases in South Carolina. All of except for one of them has been travel. One of them was sexually transmitted from an individual that had sexual relations with an individual that had the virus. So the biggest look that we have right now is from a travel, people going out, catching the virus somewhere else and bring it back in. And some of the things that we're working on that Zika virus, and part of it is the mosquito control. And that's the big way that you transfer the virus from there. And not only Zika, but there are several other types of viruses such as West Nile, equine encephalitis, and different things of that nature that we have to be aware of as well. So, and most of those are spread by the same two types of mosquitoes. And they're the aegypti, which is the yellow fever one, and then you also have the albopictus, which is more of the dragon type mosquito is what they call it. So those are the two type mosquitoes that we're really focusing on as we talk about mosquitoes and stuff too. But wanting to get rid of those other ones too, because they're irritable at times when you're trying to have a cookout or something, or just out having an enjoyable time in the backyard.
Now, just out of curiosity, do mosquitoes have, because, you know, what we usually find is that some of these pests and varmint do have a purpose. Do mosquitoes have a purpose? He's looking at me like I've never been asked this question before, but I was just curious.
And I don't know the answer to that. I would say they do have a purpose of some type, or they wouldn't exist. But I know maybe it's just to be pests for us. I don't know.
So
I will have to look that up. I don't know if there is a positive side to the mosquito population out there, but that's
so many times we find out that as we destroy something, we shouldn't be destroying as totally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. Well, we don't know the answer to that one.
Yeah.
But in our area, what types of things are going to be done or have been being done to prevent anything like the mosquito outbreaks?
Well, what we've done is DHEC and CDC have really started it, but DHEC has really been on our side that we've been working with at our level, putting together ways that we can work together to keep the Zika virus at bay as much as possible. And what we've done is we've met with them at the local level. We had a great meeting with them about 3 weeks ago, and talking about what the roles and responsibilities, how we can work together, and how we can kind of, if we do have a individual that travels or into this area with that, we can meet and kind of work through that process of how we're going to do it. And from there, what we've done is we've met with all of the municipalities as well. They've come in and we talked at this level, local level, on how we want to respond to that as well. And then also we've kind of started working with other organizations such as the beekeepers, the Lakeland Beekeepers Association, or beekeepers in general within the county, to make sure that we're working and bringing them in on board, but also working with the lake individuals as well, because that's a large area. And just so happens our lake management person, Julie Davis, she has the capability of spraying out there, and they do spray mainly for larvae. They don't do adult spraying, so we're working with that. So that's where we're kind of at right now, and we're trying to come together with a plan on how we're going to attack. So we're kind of, what I've done is put together what I call the emergency mosquito control team, and putting it together, and so trying to make sure as we go forward we have that team that can work together on a moment's notice. And the spraying side of it will be, like I say, a very small area of spraying. If we do have stuff, we're not doing this to spray for the whole county. We will spot spray if we have incidences of Zika or other types of mosquito-borne viruses out there. We will go for that. Now, that doesn't change anything that the city does or that Julie is doing at the lake, but if we're going to have this committee, is really our team, is really there for emergency situations.
And that would be particularly if there was an outbreak, if a
Correct.
Case is reported.
If there was an outbreak, or if there's just an individual that comes in that has it, we would be spraying in that area too. DHEC will tell us the area that we need to spray. And it's a very small area. Really, something that's interesting about some mosquitoes that I found, they don't travel more than about 200 yards from where their habitat was, where they're born. And that's very interesting to me from the standpoint of 200 yards. I would think, they would have a larger range than that. But that's what they try to do. So we would have about a 200-yard radius that we would spray somewhere around to make sure that we're capturing or getting those adult mosquitoes there at that time.
Okay. But there are a lot of things that we can do for ourselves to help keep mosquito growth down.
Oh, that's for certain. And the biggest thing is the best way to attack and get rid of mosquitoes is take away their habitat. And what they like is different types of containers or vessels that will hold water. And they like to lay their eggs not necessarily in the water, but just above the water level and wait for rain, and so that when the water hits them, the larvae. So if you can take away those, and believe it or not, anything bigger than a bottle cap and larger is what you need to get out of. And
wow.
So it was interesting. I was looking in my yard the other week after I started kind of learning more about mosquitoes.
Investigating, yes.
Yeah, on my education on that. And I have a container that we grow tomatoes and stuff in, but I had it turned over. and around the lip it has little areas about the size of bottle caps that hold water. And when we have rain, I just go out and turn it over, and that's all you really have to do is every once a week go out and turn it over, and it will get rid of those mosquitoes. But that's the best way to do it. The second stage and best way you can do it is to use larvicides in the areas that may not be, you know, you may have a tree that has a hole in it that holds water. You know, putting larvicide in that will help kill the larva if any are born in that area.
And what is larvicide?
It's a there's different types out there, multiple types, and what it does is it's designed so whenever the it kills the larva, which is the small mosquito, before it becomes winged, it is a little small worm looking that lives in the water,
right.
And that's what it does. It will kill those larvae in that water and keeps it from them being able to advance any in their stages.
Wow. Okay, well, this is what we're going to be talking about here today. Hey, if you got a question for George, pick up that phone, give us a call, 229-7984, or of course you can contact us on Facebook, WCRS.AM Radio. So we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. I'm with George McKinney, and we're talking about mosquitoes, everybody. You know, one of the things about mosquitoes is, one of the things we were just talking about off the air is, of course, you want to make sure that you have screens in your homes and that you're not allowing them in the house, because once they get in the house, some of them, particularly one type, loves that environment, the right. human body.
Yeah, and that's the aegypti. The Aedes aegypti is very close to houses, living in houses and stuff. If you find them in the house, that's where that's most likely the type of mosquito you're going to have in there. And the interesting thing about those, the two that we have also, both, 90% of their bites are below the waist.
They don't like the upper arms?
They will bite, but they are below the waist. And unlike most mosquitoes, they are more active during the day than they are at night. If you have cookouts and things of that nature, you notice that mosquitoes come out kind of right at dusk or something like that. And that's a different type of mosquito than what we're looking at. Now, that doesn't mean that those mosquitoes aren't out there at that
sure.
time, but they're not as active during that time frame. So that's some of the things to understand about this and how they transmit some of these viruses too, and how and when you need to protect yourself a little bit more too as you're out there. So if you're
George, you know, 6 months ago, if we had said you were going to become an expert on mosquitoes, would you have said, oh, please, Ann?
Well, no, and it's interesting in this job. You find yourself learning a lot about different things and how to help individuals protect themselves and how to kind of mitigate the impacts of those, too. So
sure.
it's interesting, and that's one reason I really enjoy my job the way it is,
yeah.
too. Because it's never a dull moment. You're always learning something new.
Exactly. Now, what about using insect repellent? Does that actually work?
Yes, it does. Make sure that it has DEET, and that's the best type that you have in there. If it has DEET in it, it's going to work. And they make stuff that you can put on your clothes and stuff. If you're working outdoors and stuff, you can actually wash it into your clothes, put it in your clothes, and it'll stay for a lot longer period of time, too, and help you. But mosquito spray, insect repellent does help, especially for mosquitoes and stuff of that nature, but making sure that you do have DEET in that when you're purchasing it.
Okay. And what's the stuff they used to use to kill off mosquitoes and everything that they don't really use anymore?
Are you talking DDT and
yeah.
stuff of that? Yeah.
Is DDT related to DEET?
Well, no.
That's what I was wondering.
No, it's a different side of it and stuff. I'm not up on that as much as what exactly is in
DEET. You're not up on the drug part of it?
No, the drug part, no. I'm more on the mosquito and a little bit more on the virus side and understanding what those threats are.
Yeah.
But I just, when we talked up there, they were saying DEET is a very good process of making sure that it's in the stuff that you're using. And nowadays, some of the stuff that the other things, like I was saying, if it bites you 90% of the time below the waist. So making sure that you wear longer pants and have
cover
your
up.
Cover up in those areas or there. Not to say that you're not going to get bit on the arm or on the back or something like that, but it's more if they're more active at a lower level there. So that's something to look at as you're doing too. And like you said, keep screens on your house. If you find mosquitoes in your house, make sure that you're using just basic stuff to kill them, and make sure you don't have areas that they can breed in there too, bathtubs, commodes, and stuff like that, or areas to do. So make sure you're cleaning your areas like that also if you're going to have them and stuff.
Absolutely. So I think that's very interesting that daytime is the most dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you wouldn't think that would be true.
That was something that really struck me as interesting when we were up at Anderson and Clemson was talking about that, is the time, because it's twofold. One is that, like you say, I would have thought it was at the evening times and stuff.
Right, dusk.
Dusk and stuff. But what's real interesting about it is that they're active during the same times that bees and stuff are active. And so that makes it a very hard process of spraying sometimes for them, and making sure that you do get with beekeepers in their areas and making sure that they know if you're going to spray in advance. And it's a state law that you're supposed to notify individuals 24 hours in advance so that they can, beekeepers in advance, so that they can have that. And that's part of our plan, and that's one of the things we're wanting to make sure we do, is making sure there's a registry that Clemson has that you can register your beehives on to make
even
sure.
Even if you just have one or two?
Just if you have one,
yeah,
and stuff, that you can put it on there. And what it is, requirement is that anybody that is spraying the pesticide that has the license to spray the pesticides must go on that website and find out who in that area has beehives, and then notify them prior to spraying and give them time enough to protect their bees and stuff.
Now, is this a law that's always been on the book, or is it that in reaction to the million or so bees that were killed?
No, it's been on the books for quite a while and stuff. When I say, I don't know exactly when it was put on, but it's not something that was just recent, very recent. So it's something that is out there that's been done, and I think it's been a direct result of the beekeepers and working with the pesticide side of the individuals and stuff, and making sure so that we're doing it. Because we definitely don't want to get rid of the bees. Bees are very vital for us to continue on with life.
There's a constant worry that we don't have enough bees.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard. I was talking today to a gentleman that was saying how hard it is nowadays to keep hives alive and going because of the different things that can affect them nowadays and stuff. So that's one of the things that we are working on this team, like I said, having a beekeepers on this team to make sure as we're going through this process, talking about it and making sure that we're not affecting stuff of that nature as best we can. So that's part of that process. So, yeah, very interesting. I wouldn't known as much about bees either as I do now.
Well, we know that they're necessary, and we know that there is constant talk about, you know, do we have enough bees to pollinate and do all the things? And there's not really something else out there that can do that job. They've got the exclusive on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's it.
They do. Hey, let's hear South Carolina Radio News, a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos. So I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're back here. How you doing this afternoon? Hey, I'm Ann Eller, and just having a little fun over here talking about things that are very serious. And, you know, one of the things I think that people really have been, I'll use the word scared by the media on the Zika virus and what it means just for the human being. Now, when we talk about pregnancy and babies, that's a different thing. But what is the deal about Zika virus?
Well, Zika can give you flu-like symptoms, you know, headaches, fever, It'll even give you a rash, joint aches, and stuff of that nature. But it is not a virus like Ebola or stuff like that that really has a high mortality rate on it. It's really in the last 9 years or so, there's only been 9 deaths associated with Zika, and those have been because of other underlying factors with the individual that had the Zika virus. The biggest impact on it is only about 20 to 25% of the people will show any symptoms at all that they have the Zika virus. And of that, only 2 to 3% can get into the what they call the more drastic area where they could have, and I may not pronounce this right, but it's Guillain-Barré, which is a neurological not disease, but factor that causes paralysis in certain parts of the body from that. But you can get that also from having a high fever with the flu or something. So that's something that they're looking at in there that's a potential in there. But out of that, 98% of the people recover fully from that also. So when you look at the overall impacts of it, it is very minimal outside of individuals, children, or women with pregnant that are pregnant and have children and stuff, where the microcephaly comes in. So the big thing also to know about the Zika virus, once you have it, your body builds up an antibody to it, and you won't have it again.
So in truth, a lot of us could have already had it over the years and just never realized it.
It's potentially, but it has not been in this area. It was first found in 1947 in Africa, in the jungles of Africa, and moved across Central Africa, and then now has moved out into Central America, and kind of has followed the paths of the Aegypti and the Albopictus mosquitoes, and mm-hmm. where those have been, and where the habitats are more prevalent for them to thrive. And so possibly here, it's not likely that any of us has had it in here, unless you had traveled to those areas or something like
on
that.
On my last safari, right,
yeah,
George?
Yeah, on your last safari, you could have had it. So if you were in Central Africa, you could have had it and
okay.
not known it and come back. And it's only lasts in your bloodstream for 7 days, 7 to 10 days, they say about 3 days before, and then about 7 days after you start showing symptoms and stuff.
Now, what about when they talk about sexually being sexually transmitted, though?
Mm-hmm. It can be, they have looked at it for 6 to 8 weeks, and there's some studies still looking at how long it will be in your, remain in your body fluid outside of your blood. But the thing that they do is they have tests for it, so you can be tested for the Zika virus if you do have it, or if you do feel you've had it, or been in the environment that you have, may have had contact with it. So it is there that you can test, and that's one of the things about it is making sure that if you are in that childbearing year age, whether you're female or male, is making sure you talk to your doctor about it and making sure that you are healthy enough at that time to go ahead and do that. And right now, like I say, in South Carolina, there's not been any outbreaks of it. There have been some cases, about 48, that have occurred, and that's as of yesterday. So that, you know, has tested positive and stuff for that coming from other areas. So it's just, if you're going to those areas, just make sure that you're either not pregnant or you're protecting yourself while you're there to make sure you don't get bitten. Or if you come back, make sure that you get yourself tested before you want to have children as well.
Hmm. Well, I know that I was talking to some people that live down in Miami on mm-hmm. South Beach and everything, and I was asking them, excuse me, I was asking them, you know, because we hear what we hear through the media. And I was asking, what is it exactly like down there? You know, is there a panic going on? Are people not going about their business? What are they doing? And she was telling me basically emergency people are going around and making sure there's not standing water. They're going mm-hmm. around and asking people, do they understand all the issues? They're being very proactive. But she said one of the biggest things, people are carrying a mosquito spray with them so that mm-hmm. they don't get mosquitoes, mm-hmm. but it's not really hampering their movement.
That's right. And if you think about it, it was very prevalent in Brazil during the Olympics. And you think about the number of people that went there and how they continued on their process too. I don't, once again, it's more just making sure that you take precautions as you go down, and whether it's spray or making sure you're dressed appropriately or making sure you're tested if you are looking to become pregnant or something of that nature on the backside of it.
And I guess people that women that are pregnant probably should not be traveling to those areas.
And that is true. It's not a good place to go while you're pregnant because you have the potential for that, for microcephaly for the children being born with it and stuff. So I would do that. But like I say, Zika is prevalent out there, and it is out there. The good thing that we have here, the mosquitoes that we're talking about, are very rare. In fact, they've had to start talking about asking additional individuals to come around and try to capture these mosquitoes and find them, because DHEC traps in every county, and they do look for these mosquitoes, to look for any of them that may be positive for West Nile or any other type of virus as well. So, but it's hard sometimes to capture them because there's just not that many here. They do exist here, but not as prevalent as other types of mosquitoes.
So I guess what you're saying is that, number one, be proactive yourself, and our county and city and everything are being very proactive. That's mm-hmm. why you're forming a committee here to make sure that if mm-hmm. there is an outbreak, how they can react mm-hmm. and make sure they catch it before it becomes widespread.
Yeah, and that's what we're doing. And we're asking the public to help us. There's very few of us, and there's more of you than they are of us. So
right.
if you can help us out by just looking for those areas, those things that do have would hold water, whether it's, and I'll tell you something else I learned up there that the mosquito individual told me, magnolia leaves are a big draw for these mosquitoes too, because if they're turned over, they're deep enough and large enough that they will hold enough water for them to lay their eggs in. So if you have a magnolia tree, please make sure you keep your leaves mulched underneath those and stuff. So, but that's the thing we're looking for the public to help us do, is to is go out and look for these things in their backyards and stuff, and make sure that they are keeping the water and the habitats down, and that will help us tremendously.
Well, that's really huge then, because you wouldn't think of a magnolia leaf being able to support enough water to hatch mosquitoes, larvae.
Yeah, that's it. That's what one of those other things I learned up there in Anderson when we were up there. And it is some of the things that you wouldn't know. But, you know, the biggest thing that is issues out there are tires. If you do have a tire, there is no way other than drilling holes all the way through it, or really cutting it up to make sure that it doesn't hold water.
Or so, get rid of it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Or put it in a place where there is no water that can get to it. That's sure. About the only thing. And that's one of the things they stress a lot, too. So if you know where there's an old tire or something, go pick it up and make sure it gets to the landfill or whatever and
right.
puts in the trash.
Yep.
Recycle. And stuff, so that we can make sure that we help cut back on the mosquito habitats.
Well, those are some of the things. And then, of course, the big news is, and this is something I didn't know, and I know that you were telling me that a lot of honeybees, those that keep bees, don't realize bigger farms or bigger collectors of honey have known this, but if you only have one or two hives, just one hive, you should sign up. Now, how do you sign up? Where do you sign up?
You go to the Clemson website, and if it's on the pesticide side of it, if you go on there, and it'll be on my website, the location to go do that. You can go look at greenwoodsc.gov and go to the emergency management area, and I'll make sure, and I may even just go ahead and put it out, see if we can put it out up front for a few weeks to get people to do that, to help us do that. So if you go there, I will post that site for you to, it's a long
But it's a
website.
Link to on Clemson, on the pesticide
right,
side.
Right.
And does it say something like register your bees? Or
yeah, it does. It talks about registering your bees. If you go on and Google it, you can say Clemson Beehive Registration, and it'll take you straight to the link too. And that way you can go ahead and do it as well. But it does talk about it, and it's very important, because the individuals that do spray the pesticide want to make sure that we keep the bees around too. And so they want to be able to be proactive in this. And they are, by law, required to call and let individuals know 24 hours in advance before they spray any type of pesticide if they are in the area that they're going to be spraying, whether it's an aerial spraying or ground spraying.
And this isn't for any other type of regulation, just to alert the sprayers that you have bees.
Correct.
I mean, so there's no other reason not to do it.
That's right. And Clemson keeps that very close hold. They don't pass that out. And part of the reason for that is there is competition in the bee hive industry on areas of where they go try to do this. So they want to make sure that they keep all of this stuff on the up and up, and they don't share that information. You have to have, you have to have a certificate level 8 to be able to get to the website, and you have to use that number to get on, and that's only individuals that have that capability of spraying.
Okay, so they would be the only ones. You don't, as a beekeeper, don't have to have any registration.
No.
You're saying the pesticide sprayers.
They have to have the certificate to spray the pesticide. The certified at that level to spray for that type of pesticide that would impact bees.
Okay. All right, so this is really important, folks. If you've got a beehive in the backyard and you don't want anything to happen to your bees, why don't you go and register for on Clemson's website under pesticides for
beehive registration.
Whether you've got one or you've got 10, it doesn't matter. But that way you'll be notified if somebody is spraying in your area, and you'll be able to protect your bees. And that's a sizable investment.
And whether it's a hobby or whether it's
a business. Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. We'll be back. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Layaway. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know layaway every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us, 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. My very special guest this afternoon, George McKinney with Emergency Management right here. And you know, George, I was just reading, I was reading how to prevent transmission on the mosquitoes, and it says empty and scrub, turnover, cover, throw out, et cetera, et cetera. And then it goes bird baths.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now that's one you wouldn't think, you know, you wouldn't think about it because people that have bird baths, they have it out there for the birds, right?
Yeah. And what you need to do is just go out and turn it over or clean it out once a day or once a week and make sure that, you know, you're putting water in back into it and allow it to go. But it is something, but something else people don't think about is dog bowls as well, is making sure if you've got outside dogs and stuff, making sure that you're turning those over and cleaning those out on a weekly basis, a daily basis in some cases, making sure that you've got them. Don't give those mosquitoes a chance.
By dumping it out, by dumping out the water, cleaning it out, you're preventing the mosquitoes from reproducing.
That's correct, because the eggs will go out with it, and what will happen, or if there are larvae in it, they will go out on the ground and they will not be able to survive. So that's the thing that you're looking at doing. And lots of people can just go out and spray out the bird bath, depending on how deep it is and what they have, and just spray it out enough water so it makes sure it goes out, and that's about all you have to do. And I bet the birds would like it too. So
All right. So, but you need to just clean out everything like once a week, really.
Correct.
I would say that. Okay. All right. Well, we wanted to talk about a couple more things. Code Red, how you doing on getting everybody signed up?
We're doing good. We've had a few calling in from day to day, so we're still pushing that, and we have people coming into the county on a daily basis, I'm sure, so getting those registered there, something we want to make sure that people there, and you can still go to the website at greenwoodsc.gov or give me a call and I will call you back. Last week I was on vacation. I had two calls, so I'm going to have to call them back tomorrow and make sure we get them
signed.
Well,
George, make sure you call them, because I don't want any of my people calling and saying, he never calls me back. And I have had a couple of those calls, George.
Well, I know.
So yeah. Make sure you call them back.
I will.
And what is that number to call?
It's 942-8553. And leave me a message and we'll get back with you. I do have an intern that just started today, so we're going to be training her on how to sign
call people up.
And sign them up. That's what we're going to be doing too. So, well, I have a little bit of help. Instead of three people, now we have six. So me, myself, and I times two. So.
Okay, there you go. That's great. Now, one of the other concerns has been, of course, though, is the gas shortage that they've been talking about. I don't know if we've really had it here, but in some outlying areas, there's been the gas shortage.
Yeah, there have been. I know of, heard of one location here in the county that did run out of fuel. But lots of it is more about timing than it is about shortage in lots of cases. Some of it is a lots of there was a big run, and I understand, you know, the prices went up, and so people wanted to fill up their tanks at the least amount they had to pay on that. But that causes some of that overusage that you wouldn't normally do too. So that contributes to it. But there's some good news on the horizon. Today I got an email through the pipeline association that we work with that looks like the Colonial Pipeline should be able to open up the pipeline tomorrow is what they're hoping, and a very good possibility of that, and looking at having the flow of fuel back up to standard by the end of this week. So by the weekend we should be getting back to normal on those sides of the house is what they're looking at now. So it's looking up on the side. So I think we've weathered the worst of it as we go forward through this. But it's something interesting to know is that, you know, you never know how quickly things can turn. In fact, this happened, started on the 9th, and I found out about it really on the 12th, listening to it. So it's something to be aware of as you're out there. But most cases, there are workarounds on that. They're able to push fuel through the one pipe. They have two lines that run all the way up to New York, back down to the Gulf Coast, and they're able to work all kinds of different fuels into it. So, and plus they up their other transportation means to get in it. So it's really more of a transportation issue than a shortage of fuel.
Sure.
Kind of like what happened during Katrina, there was a shortage because they shut down the oil wells out in the Gulf and stuff, and so the refineries were shut down as well. So that,
I think one of the best tips is don't let it get down to so empty that if you have to go to another gas station, it's a problem.
That's right. That's a good rule of thumb is I never let mine get below a quarter tank, and I'm going to fill it up somewhere. So that way you always have that. You never know when you'll have to go somewhere.
That's right. And you never know when something could happen. I mean, how are we looking so far for this fall with hurricanes and storms?
So far we've been lucky. There's two out there right now in the Atlantic, but it looks like both of those are going to go become what my friend Mark Mausick says, is that they're going to be fish storms, and only the French will have to worry about them. So so that's looking good, but you never know. One could pop up at any given time. We're just now kind of winding down to the peak. About 10 October is really where the peak areas really end. We're on the downside of that, and then it really drops off quickly after that. So, but the thing about it is this time of the year is the peak from September, October, November is the second peak for tornado season right now, given the fact that the transition from more of a warmer environment to a cooler environment gives the potential for those to occur a lot more often during this time frame too. So, and don't know what the winter's going to hold yet too, so we'll see that. Hopefully we'll have a briefing on that in the next month or so to kind of get a feel for what we're expecting this winter.
Okay. All right, so as we get ready for fall here and everything, make sure you're keeping those items that have a tendency to keep water in them, even down to magnolia leaves. Who would have thunk it? But all these things, if they get dried out, if they get dumped out, then the mosquitoes cannot survive. And so whether you have the Zika or not, nobody wants to have mosquitoes around.
That's exactly
right. Good advice for whether you're worried about Zika or just worried about having the kids out in the yard and getting stung by bitten by mosquitoes.
Yep, that's it. And make sure evening get-togethers outside a little bit better too.
Absolutely. See, that was another thing I didn't know. So, you know, whenever you come, George, we always learn a lot. And that's why signing up for Code Red is so important. home so you can be apprised when something is coming. And there's so many ways. George, just real quick, tell them how many different ways they could be notified.
Oh, you can be notified in by phone, cell phone, landline. You can be notified by text or email. All of those will come to you straight through there if you're signed up for it. And if we're going to be spraying, we will be calling too. So sign up so you'll get the word about the mosquito spraying in your area possibly too.
All right. And one more time, how do you sign up for it?
You can go to greenwoodsc.gov and click on the website there. And then, or you can call me at 942-8553 and I will get you signed up.
Absolutely. Well, George, thanks so much for coming out today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. We're going to say I do. I am not going to be here Wednesday or Thursday morning. I think we've been talking about that. But tune in because we got some good stuff planned for you. Hey, that's going to do it for us. Bye, everybody.